This interview is being conducted with Captain P.O. Brady by Gunnery Sergeant Alan B. Richardson at Marine Corps Schools, Quantico, Virginia. The subject of this interview is the infantry advisor to the Vietnamese battalion, and the subject of this is unclassified. Captain Brady, would you state your name, grade, and service number, please?
Captain Philip O. Brady, Captain 082115, serial number.
What were your duty assignments while you were in Vietnam?
I was the assistant infantry advisor to the 4th Vietnamese Marine Battalion.
Okay, you're on.
This interview is being conducted with Captain P.O. Brady by Gunnery Sergeant Alan B. Richardson at Marine Corps Schools, Quantico, Virginia. The subject of this interview is the infantry advisor to the Vietnamese battalion, and the subject of it is unclassified. Captain Brady, would you state your name, grade, and service number, please?
Philip O. Brady, Captain, service number 082115.
What were your duty assignments while you were in Vietnam?
I was an assistant infantry advisor to the 4th Vietnamese Marine Battalion.
What period did you serve in these billets, and where were you physically located within Vietnam during the period covered?
I served in that capacity from November 64 to 1 December 1965. During that period of time, I operated with the battalion in the 2nd and 3rd Corps areas of Vietnam.
Would you discuss a specific action that you participated in Vietnam?
One specific action which we were involved in, major action, was occurred on the 31st of December 1964. The action centered around a small pro-government village by the name of Binh Gia, approximately 40 miles southeast of Saigon. The village was populated by North Vietnamese refugees who were predominantly Catholic, anti-communist, and pro-government in sympathy. Several days prior to our arrival, when I say our arrival, I mean the battalion, the town had been overrun by an estimated Viet Cong regular reinforced battalion. The town was held, and although repeated attempts were made to retake it by various ranger battalions, their efforts were unsuccessful. At that time, we were acting as the 3rd Corps Reserve and were finally committed on the 28th of December. Upon our arrival and initial subsequent operations, we regained the town and no Viet Cong were found. However, on the morning of the 31st of December, an Army helicopter, which had been shot down the previous evening, was presumed lost, but our battalion was assigned the mission to determine whether there were any survivors, or for that matter, the exact location of the helicopter crash. It was estimated that the helicopter was approximately 3 kilometers to the west of the town, located in a rubber plantation. In the morning, one company of the battalion went out on a reconnaissance patrol to determine the exact location of the helicopter. The company was accompanied by the senior battalion advisor, Captain F.P. Eller. Upon locating the helicopter, which was in fact in the rubber trees, Captain Eller and the rest of the company of the battalion came under an attack by an estimated battalion of regular Viet Cong forces. Due to the obvious superiority in men and firepower of the Viet Cong, they were forced to retreat. The remainder of the battalion, upon hearing this, both over the radio as well as hearing the fire going on down in the rubber trees, decided to go down and relieve the company and find out exactly what was going on. The stragglers of the, or the survivors of the company which Captain Eller was in, jury joined us on the road leading the rubber plantation, and then the battalion minus this one company, which made the initial exploration into the rubber trees, went into the rubber trees to, one, retrieve the wounded, and two, get any bodies of Americans who were killed in the helicopter crash. Having remained there for the remainder of the afternoon, attempting to accomplish their mission, the battalion came under attack by an estimated four Viet Cong regular battalions, perhaps more. Estimated strength ran anywhere from 1,200 to 1,800 Viet Cong. The battalion minus, was quickly surrounded in the rubber trees, and in the engagement that ensued, they suffered approximately 60% casualties. The battalion was again fought its way out, the remainders of the battalion fought its way out, and went back into the town of Binjiao, where they regrouped with Rangers and were later relieved by subsequent reinforcements from Saigon. In commenting on this engagement, several facets or several things of importance exist, both on our side as well as the Viet Cong. One, discussing our size, the intelligence estimates prior to the commitment of this battalion were inadequate. It was estimated one reinforced Viet Cong battalion was in the area. It soon became apparent when talking to the advisors who were already there and other Ranger outfits that there were at least 3 to 6 battalions in the area. Secondly, there was no artillery support. Third, the air support was limited to helicopter support provided for by the Army Aviation, and the Vietnamese Air Force provided Sky Raiders. However, upon running out of ammunition in the early action in the afternoon, and although reinforcements as far as Sky Raiders were requested by the battalion commander, Vietnamese battalion commander, this new strike was on its way from Ben Hoa to the town, but this strike was canceled by someone in the higher echelons of the Vietnamese chain of command because they felt that the strike was not necessary. So the ground commander's estimate of what he needed as far as ground support was disregarded completely. Third, it should be noted that an omission such as this, with the known strength of the enemy, that a force consisting of 326 Vietnamese Marines is confronted with 1,200 or some possibly as much as 1,800 regular Viet Cong troops. They were vastly outnumbered, and any mission which exposed them to this numerical superiority without adequate firepower or at least some reserve or some type of supporting means available was sheer suicide. But in any case, the battalion did suffer 60% casualties and was rendered inoperable for a period of 3 months, in which time they did retraining and re-equipping. As far as the Viet Cong concerned, this was not an ambush. It was known that they were there. The Vietnamese battalion command was cautioned as concerned security. However, he disregarded these recommendations on my part. The Viet Cong themselves were very well equipped. They had webbed gear. They had they looked the part of the government soldier, steel helmets, etc. They were very well disciplined. They advanced by fire maneuver. They used their supporting arms, chiefly which were 57 recoilless rifles and 81 millimeter mortars, quite effectively. They employed 50 caliber machine guns in ground fire, which indicated if they were willing to expend that ammunition on the ground, that they had a great deal of it. When they went into a static position or defensive position, they used wire. Their field emplacements were good. Overall, it was their best battalions and that we had been confronted with, and the well-disciplined and well-motivated. So that was the result of that. Now, in an overall evaluation of the Vietnamese Marine Battalion I served with, I think that their chief deficiency, and I think that this could be noted in other battalions that I served with, as far as along with, that their chief inadequacy is leadership. Now, this is not entirely their fault. First of all, in the time I was with them, their TO calls for approximately 35 officers. They lost 29 officers killed. This turnover of highly experienced, in many cases, officers having this casualty rate inflicts a great deal of damage on their leadership capability. Secondly, their political stability or the political motivations behind an officer, his religion, many of these things had a great bearing on how much force or how much leadership he was going to exert. Most of them preferred to play it safe. Third, there was an overriding philosophy. I don't know where they got it. I think part of it was due just to the officer's stature in that particular country and possibly their heritage. But in any case, the officer found would not, one, delegate authority, two, displayed a marginal interest in the troops' welfare. And this could be possibly a carryover from their tenureship or their tenure under the French, where they were given very little authority themselves, or it possibly could relate to their history as an individuals.
Did this leadership problem involve the officers or the NCOs?
The officers commanded and had all the authority. It was a one-man show. The battalion staff did not exist. All plans were created and executed by the battalion commander. The NCOs were not given the authority to do much of anything. When, for instance, if you wanted to go get water, the company commander formed the company and he went. He took the company to get water. And you could parallel this in any case. They were not delegated the proper degree of authority, although they had the capability.
Did you speak Vietnamese, Captain?
Yes.
So there wasn't any problem as far as the language barrier was concerned?
Well, there wasn't, but I would say initially there was. I attended the MATA course at Fort Bragg where I had 40 hours. This has since been expanded, I understand, to 120 hours of language. Any Vietnamese that I used was a result of a conscientious effort to pick up the language when discussing it with the nationals themselves.
How do you feel about your training you received prior to going to Vietnam? Do you feel it was adequate?
Well, the MATA course was the only training I had prior to that, outside of course, the basic school and my on-the-job training in the division which I served in prior to the assignment. But the specific preparation, the MATA course, had some facets of which were good and other facets were not. The language was good. That has been expanded. That is valuable. Secondly, the background on the individual personnel, the Vietnamese personnel, their customs, traditions is valuable. That was included. Outside of that, there's nothing else of value for a battalion advisor. It would be assumed that when being assigned there, he has a working practical knowledge of small unit tactics, which is what he needs to know. The rest of it was an orientation on the part for the role of USOM, the role of many facets, the big picture, in other words. But this did not concern you as a battalion advisor, and I found it, for the most part, useless.
Thank you very much, Captain, for your interview.